Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hi, I'm Raj Punjabi, head of identity content at HuffPost.
And I'm Noah Michelson, head of HuffPost Personal.
Welcome to Am I Doing It Wrong? The show that explores the all too human anxieties we have about trying to get our lives right.
So Raj, I have this friend, Barry. Hi, Barry. She is like a Am I Doing It Wrong super fan.
Love it.
But she admitted to me that sometimes she doesn't want to listen to episodes because she's afraid she's going to learn that she has been doing it totally wrong.
Sure.
And she has anxiety about that. Like the episode about internet privacy, she still hasn't heard it because she's freaked out. So I think today's episode might be one of those episodes that she's not going to want to listen to.
Okay, look, I totally feel her because we are going to be talking about germs that are found in our bathrooms. Right. What could be more triggering than that subject? I mean, even if you're not a quote unquote germaphobe, it's scary once you really start thinking about it. But we got to all put our brave underpants on because I really want to be better at it. I want to have the best hygiene possible and, you know, hopefully live a long and healthy life.
Yeah. And I know that we're doing the germs in our bathrooms wrong.
I agree.
So let's get better. And to help us get better, we have Jason Tetreault. He is affectionately known as the Germ Guy. He's written two books, The Germ Code and The Germ Files. He's going to help us figure out what's lurking in our bathrooms and how we vanquish them.
Clean us up, Jason.
Hi, Jason. Thanks for being here with us.
It's such a pleasure to be with you.
So let's start just with the idea that you've been researching germs for decades. And I think that a lot of them get a bad rap, and for good reason. But can you tell us about the idea between good germs and bad germs? Because not all germs are bad, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we tend to use in English this idea of good germs and bad germs. But when you're talking about the science of it, it really doesn't go into that kind of direction. I like to think of it this way. There are germs absolutely everywhere. Like there are what we call a nonillion, which is kind of like a one with 27 zeros behind it. That's how many microbes there probably are on the planet. And so when you start thinking it from that perspective, not only do they outnumber us, but then you're just like, oh my goodness, you know, if I'm afraid of all of them, well, you're going to be afraid of absolutely everything.
Right.
Thankfully, we don't have to worry of it that way. And we can think of microbes in the same way that we think of, say, a large populous city. So think about something like a New York City, and you start thinking about all the people who are in that particular city, and you're like, okay, cool, this is wonderful. Now, most of those people, they're going to be completely harmless. Mm. They're just going to go about their business, getting their coffee, getting their bagel with lox sometimes. I don't know. I prefer cream cheese. But the fact is, you're going to have most of these people who are inconsequential to the city itself, right? Yeah. And what we call these are commensals. And so that's the majority of microbes that are out there, okay? Now, we're going to have some that actually benefit the city. Some people will benefit the city. Firefighters, police officers, maybe some politicians. But anyways, you know what I'm saying, right? And those are what we call symbiotes because they work with the city to make it better. And then there are microbes that actually work with our bodies to make us better. And then there's a very, very, very small number of microbes. And we're talking about only about 1,500 species out of the potential millions that are out there that can cause us harm. And in those cases, those are the villains, those are the bad guys, those are the ones that we're hunting down, those are the ones that keep the law and order series in order. And so as we go in that light, we're always worried and concerned about those 1,500. Now, here's the thing. I don't know about you, but when we talk about microbes, we always tend to focus on those 1,500. And in fact, we only really focus on about a dozen of those, which are going to cause us big problems. Mm-hmm. You might have heard of one of them most recently. It's called SARS-CoV-2. I don't know. Have you heard of that one?
I have.
It caused a pandemic a few years ago. Yes. People got all upset and everything. Yeah.
People got all upset.
Yeah. And so those bad ones always seem to get the headlines, whereas the good ones, I mean, no one talks about them. Mm-hmm. And that's where me as the germ guy comes into it, because I want to have a good relationship with these microbes. And I want you to think about all the others that aren't going to cause you problems, as opposed to the ones that do and how to avoid them and, you know, basically kill them.
Right.
So interesting. I love shifting the paradigm to be like, a lot of these germs are good. And we'll worry about the bad ones, but we're not under attack constantly.
Completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's just start it off this way, okay? You as a human being have about 37.2 trillion cells. There's not going to be a quiz at the end of this. Just go with me, okay? Now, when we talk about microbes, we're talking about bacteria, we're talking about viruses, we're talking about some protozoa, maybe a helminth or two. And sometimes there's a yeast and a fungus, but we don't like talking about those because people get really weird about that. But anyways, out of those, you're probably going to have at least the same amount, but most likely more in and on your body. So that means that there are going to be trillions and trillions and trillions of microbes that are essentially part of you. The majority of them happen to be in your gastrointestinal system. And the only time that we really come into contact with our gastrointestinal system on the inside is when we're in the toilet.
Right.
As you might expect, then, the majority of germs that we're going to encounter in any household happen to be in the toilet. And so from that perspective, that's the one place we can start looking at as being our model or as our, you know, stand-in or poster room, I guess is the best way of calling it, for what we should be doing when it comes to trying to prevent the bad ones. Because a lot of those microbes that are in your fecal matter, they can make you sick.
Well, so yeah, we're starting with the toilet. I've heard that when you flush the toilet, poo particles, I guess that's not a technical term, but that's what we're going to use, can launch as high as 6 feet in the air. Tell me what you've learned about what happens when we flush the toilet, what we should be worried about.
I want to take you back a few years, okay? Because this first started in 1976, all right? And the whole idea was, is there something that's coming out of the toilet when you flush it if you don't keep the lid down?
Right.
And so we called it back then a plume. So it's not poo particles, it's a plume of droplets in the air.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And what they found, so they put a whole bunch of petri plates around a toilet, flushed the toilet a few times and took a look at what grew. And sure enough, within 6 feet of that toilet, you had microbes that were growing because that's the droplets span. By the way, that's also one of the reasons why we always tell people you should stay 6 feet away from someone when they sneeze. Basically, it's kind of because of the toilet idea. But anyways, so yes, about 6 feet away, you will actually start to see growth. Now, that was back in 1976. Okay, let's jump to today, because we now have had the Austin Powers movies. And as a result of that, what are we going to use to be able to identify poo droplets?
A laser.
Frickin' lasers. Exactly. And we've used frickin' lasers to be able to identify it. And sure enough, it goes 6 feet in the air and it can go out about 6 feet away. And while a lot of people are probably thinking, that's some really good trivia there, Bull. Sorry, I'm a Gen Xer. So if you remember Night Court, the original one, the new renewal, it hasn't been as good. But anyway, if you remember that type of trivia, that's great. But also tend to remember that within 6 feet of your toilet is usually your toothbrush.
Right.
Yeah. Especially in our small New York City bathrooms.
Yeah, way less than 6 feet. Yeah,
going 3.5.
And when you think of it from that perspective, then you start to begin to realize that if you're not closing the lid, then what ends up happening is that plume of droplets that contain your poo particles are getting onto things that are going to be touching your face and going inside of your mouth.
Oh,
and
Lord.
As I just said, sometimes those fecal microbes can potentially cause infection and other problems. So yeah, keep that lid down.
Okay, but I read somewhere as well, Jason, that even with the lid down, the plume can still rush out the side of the lid. Are you, is
attack
that something
the killer plume.
Like
yeah.
You just can't get away from it. Is that something we shouldn't be worried about? Like with the lid down, is most of it being contained and like that's just going to make us that much healthier if we do that?
Yeah. So if you keep the lid closed and you do end up with a little bit of a plume coming out of the sides, it's just essentially going to drop and, you know, make sure that you're cleaning the floor around your toilet about once every couple of weeks. That's not a problem.
Okay.
Where we've run into this problem, and this is the same thing with hand dryers and public toilets. I know that we're talking about the host, but a lot of people have talked about, you know, air dryers being a spreader of microbes. Well, where they're placed, unless you have a two-year-old toddler there, there's really no risk.
Right.
Yeah. So what I would recommend is that you don't flush the toilet when there's someone whose face happens to be at the same height as your toilet. And I think you're sure going to be good.
Right.
And if you are having a toddler that's standing there or any kind of, you know, living being that's there while you're flushing the toilet with the lid down, yeah, you probably are doing it wrong.
I think that's good, right?
How often should we be cleaning them?
So if you were to be able to swab a toilet and then run that on a Petri dish, you're probably going to get a bunch of bacteria, but most of those are going to be environmental because it's going to come from the water. And the reason for that is because toilets do what they're supposed to do, which is to remove whatever is in the bowl other than the plume and take it down into the drain and that type of thing. So in that sense, you really don't need to worry too much about contamination and growth and all that stuff. Where it becomes a problem is when you start to create these rings. Like, you remember ring around the tub, ring around the toilet?
Mm-hmm.
These are what we call biofilms, and they're caused by the bacteria that are in the water. You can create these in the lab as well. I used to do this all the time. And they become very sticky. And that's where the poo bacteria can essentially start to accumulate. So what you want to do is try and prevent any of these biofilms from forming. Now, it takes about 3 days to start creating a biofilm that isn't visible, but could start being sticky. So if you really want to be clean about it, then you want to be cleaning about every 3 days. However, most of the time, it takes about 7 days before you get to a point where any of that stickiness could lead to poo sticking around. So once a week is a really good option. The only time that I would say that you would want to do it more than that is if someone does have a gastrointestinal infection, because then, we've seen salmonella survive in a toilet bowl up to 7 weeks. I mean, it's just one of those things where if you have any GI issues, then you really should be cleaning up later on that same day just to be absolutely sure.
Okay.
Going back to what we said about good and bad germs, that the bad ones are really just bitches. Mm-hmm. Like, God, now I get it.
Yes.
They won't get out. They want what they want. They're going to take it.
The last one at the party every time. I hate that for us.
Jason, tell us what is actually the germiest part in the bathroom, though, because I've heard it's not the toilet. What would you say is the germiest part of the bathroom?
Well, when we talk about germiest, we're talking about the most number of microbes, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so when you think about it, you then have to go, okay, so I have to figure out bacteria, viruses, fungi, they're going to be on surfaces. That's great. And now we have to sort of think about where are the surfaces that we have a lot of surface area. Mm. And you're like, okay, great. So when you look at a bathroom and you look for something that has the highest surface area, you're going to see something incredibly obvious. It's probably going to be looking straight at you and you're going to be going, oh my goodness, why didn't I think of that before? And it happens to be the bath mat.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are going, no, Jason, it's the shower curtain. It's like, yes, I get you. It probably is the shower curtain when you're looking at it. But what you're not realizing is that bath mats are designed to be, you know, nice and fluffy and they have little pills and all this type of thing. And within all of that are surface area. And that's where we're going to really start to see a lot of those microbes grow. When it comes down to it, though, you probably are going to have more of a chance of your face touching a shower curtain than a bath mat.
Right.
Yeah.
So while the bath mat might be the germiest place, the shower curtain is actually the one that you might want to be a little bit more concerned about.
That's interesting too, because I definitely wash my bath mat every week when I do my laundry, but I can't tell you the last time I washed my shower curtain.
I just replace it. You know, when it starts to get dingy? Because I hate cleaning that. It's like the most annoying thing. So I'll clean it a few times. I'll replace it every maybe 2 months or so.
Is this your shower curtain or your shower lining?
No, the liner, lining.
But how often are you changing your shower curtain?
Oh my God, not often at all.
Ever.
Never.
So should we be washing our shower curtain, Jason?
Oh, absolutely. What I tend to do is when I'm cleaning my bathroom, I will use the disinfectant of choice. And for me, it's a bleach because it's a bathroom.
Yeah.
And I'll just spray my shower curtain because the shower curtain is going to be resistant if it's made of a really good plastic. And so you can spray it on a regular basis. So every time I clean the bathroom, I clean the shower curtain as well with a disinfectant to make sure that I'm reducing the potential for microbes to show up. Where a shower curtain really becomes a problem is, and I don't know if you've ever had this because a lot of people use white shower curtains, but I have a black shower curtain so that I can see the hard water stains.
Right.
And the reason that I want to see that is because when you have a hard water stain, you have a biofilm. And when a biofilm starts to form, that's again when you start to have problems. Now, we may not be talking about gastrointestinal issues because, you know, again, you should be cleaning yourself in a particular way that it's going to go down the drain and not on your shower curtain. But a lot of people, when they're washing their hair, don't realize that they might be getting some of that onto the shower curtain. And there's a really interesting fungus called Malassezia, which causes dandruff. And so in a way, you could be transferring dandruff from one individual to another if you're using the same shower stall or shower curtain. And as a result of that, you want to be making sure that you're cleaning that on a regular basis. Yeah.
Right.
You know, I've seen evidence and like residue from my shampoo, like on the walls of my shower, because I'm an active shower. I dance in there, do a little concert. So this is like very important information for me.
Yeah.
Wow.
The other place that I've heard about this biofilm forming is somewhere we don't think about as well, the shower head.
Oh, yeah. No, I cleaned that. That just like, I feel like you can see when it's like kind of gross.
Yeah. But that is something we should also be cleaning, right, Jason?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And one of the nice things is that usually shower heads, you don't even need a wrench. It just kind of comes off and then you can disinfect it and clean it. However, and if you remember the good old days of infomercials, you could also use one of these green descaling products and just put it in there and hold it there for like 2 hours. But the thing is, I mean, it's the scaling that's coming from the water that's leading to the biofilm being formed. And then that can lead to other types of microbes attaching to it and causing problems. Now, when we talk about shower heads and water, especially domestic water supplies in apartments, in gyms and this types of thing, sometimes they will have a water source that is essentially a tank that's kept somewhere, like on the roof or something. And what we've learned is that sometimes that will allow a particular type of bacterium to grow. It's called Legionella. And that can cause any kind of mild to severe pneumonia. Oh, and so one of the things you want to try and minimize is the amount of potential for a biofilm, because if a biofilm forms in the shower head, it could potentially form with this Legionella, and that could be essentially throwing pathogen on you. Another possibility is something that we call non-tuberculosis mycobacteria. It's been involved in reducing people's health. And it also can be in water supplies from all over different places in the world. And again, you want to try and minimize the formation of biofilms in there. So while you may not think about your shower head as being a place where you would have problems, it definitely is something you should be thinking about. And really, you should be cleaning that about the same, with the same frequency as you're making sure that you're de-dusting your shower fan.
Okay.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Finance.
Raj, I've got a question that I've been asking myself a lot recently.
Tell me.
Am I investing wrong?
Ooh, I see what you did there.
But I'm sincerely asking because look, I have investments. I have an account here, a 401k there, and I'm really lucky I don't have any crushing debt. But until recently, I haven't had the confidence that I've been doing it right.
I know what you mean. We all want to make sure we're making good financial decisions, not just doing whatever Susie Orman told us to do 10 years ago.
Exactly. But that's why I've been using Yahoo Finance.
Tell me more about it.
Well, with Yahoo Finance, I've been able to consolidate all of my accounts into one place. And I gotta tell you something, it's been so much easier.
Okay, Yahoo Finance. It's giving nostalgia.
Absolutely. You know, I found Yahoo Finance to be incredibly helpful for tracking everything I need with all of my money. And as you probably know at this point, I'm quite wealthy.
I know, spiritually and literally. I am not a wealthy 1%er yet. So would the service be good for me still?
Oh, 100%. Yahoo Finance is good for everyone, from the very seasoned investor or just a normie like you who's looking for a little extra guidance. It gives you all the tools and info you need.
So if I'm hearing you right, it sounds like Yahoo Finance will give me a holistic look at the financial news cycle, original editorial perspectives, and so much more.
That's exactly right. And let's just say Yahoo Finance is going to be the perfect place to link all your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments.
Hell yeah. I cannot wait to make it rain with the help of Yahoo Finance.
So for comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination.
yahoofinance.com. Once again, that's yahoofinance.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
So Noah, I have to tell you, I've been really struggling with time management lately, just kind of trying to fit in work, time with my family, exercise, everything I need to be doing in such a short day. And it's become less annoying and more of an anxiety-fueled stressor, you know? It's been a lot.
I hate that for you. But I also think that you're not alone. I think a lot of us are going through that. And when we keep things bottled up, it can start to really negatively affect us. So I think we need a safe space to get things off our chest and figure out how to work through whatever is weighing us down. Somewhere like therapy.
I totally agree. In fact, I've been bringing this conversation into my sessions, and it's been so helpful so far. My therapist is always ready with new coping skills that are kind of tailor-made to my personality and life. And I think people don't realize how much of an impact that can make.
I love that. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/doingitwrong today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/doingitwrong. Welcome back to Am I Doing It Wrong? Wow. Yeah. Okay. I have to ask about, you know, the things we're using to clean our bodies in the shower as well. In our household, there's loofahs and washcloths. That's what we use, right? So I understand that things that are wet are going to grow more bacteria, sometimes bad ones. And you can correct me if I'm saying this wrong. But all I know is that we need to dry those and wash them often. Can you tell me about loofah and washcloth maintenance? Help me.
So, remember how I told you that you're made of both cells and germs?
Yes.
And that there's probably more than of germs than there are on you? Well, it turns out that there was some research done probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I think it was. Anyway, it was a paper that essentially said that every single person has their own what we call microbial cloud.
Okay.
And so as we're moving around, as we're sitting down, as you're sitting right now, you are shedding up to about 1 million germs every hour. Okay. The thing is a loofah is designed to help you shed more.
Right.
So it's going to end up getting a lot of microbes into it. And we could probably see with regular use billions of microbes in that loofah. Okay. Now, the thing is, there's not that much surface area compared to a bath mat. However, because it literally is coming into your face,
yeah,
it's something you want to be making sure that you're cleaning on a regular basis. Okay. So if you can launder it, awesome. Do it once a week. Do it with your towels. However, you can also disinfect many of these because they're made with a nice resistant type of plastic or hopefully one of these days, kombucha cellulose. But anyway, that's another podcast altogether. So when you disinfect it, what's going to end up happening is that you're killing all those microbes and then you're making it free. And while we do have lots of, you know, disinfectants that we can use, usually 10% bleach or pure vinegar or even just 5% citric acid, you leave it in there for an hour, you're good to go.
Lovely.
That's
amazing. I was like, let me just burn this thing now, the way he was talking about the loofah. But no.
No, great. Environmental sustainability burning stuff.
No. Right. The towels we're using to dry our bodies after the shower. What's happening there? How often should we be washing them? I'm not going to tell you how often I wash mine until you tell me what's right.
Yeah, I always get that, right? Like people are going, you know, Jason, how do we wash the towels? How often should we wash the towels? And I always sort of say, well, how often do you wash your towels? Like, no, you tell me first. And the reason is a lot of people don't wash their towels until they start to stink.
Right.
And the reason that they start to stink, not surprisingly, is that bacteria are starting to grow in there. Now, a little earlier, we were talking about where the poo from humans goes. It goes into a toilet, right?
Yeah.
Where does the poo from bacteria go?
Oh, God.
Nowhere. It just hangs out with the bacteria.
Exactly. They have lovely efflux systems that send it out of their cellular membrane, but then it goes into the extracellular space. Now, in a petri dish, that's not bad. Mm-hmm. But in a towel, it just basically accumulates. Right. And that smell that you're starting to get is essentially those byproducts that the bacteria and, in, you know, fungi are starting to create. And when that happens, it means that not only have you formed a biofilm, but you've created one that's large enough to be able to create enough bacterial mass that you can smell it. So the goal is to make sure that you're washing your towels before any of that happens.
Okay.
And so when you think about it from just a purely, you know, how much am I contaminating my towel perspective, when you are essentially doing it once a day, a shower once a day, probably within 1 week, you will have essentially contaminated it enough to a level where it's going to be growing on its own without any help, because there'll be enough humidity, there'll be enough of your dead skin and oils and everything to give it food, and it's always in a nice warm environment.
Yeah.
So once a week is a really, really good sort of benchmark, if you want, to doing some kind of laundry with it. That being said, if you're taking two showers a day and you're using the same towel, which I don't know how you do. Like, I cannot stand using a moist towel. If anyone out there is using a moist towel, can you please tell me how you do it? Because I just hate it. But then you're probably looking at 3 to 4 days because it's cumulative.
Okay. Right.
But if you're only taking a shower once every 2 days or once in every 3 days, then maybe it'll last 2 to 3 weeks. So basically, depending on how often you're showering, that's how often you should be changing them and putting them in the laundry. And always, always, always make sure that when you're using the laundry for towels, it's hot, 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 hot water.
Okay.
And if it can be bleach resistant, use bleach. And if it's not bleach resistant, use something with enzymes.
Jason, when we are disinfecting in the bathroom, what does that look like? I've heard that if you don't put the cleaning solution on long enough, you might not be cleaning or you might not be disinfecting. How long do we need to be cleaning surfaces in the bathroom for us to actually have them be disinfected?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Okay. So where you're getting a bit caught up in this is the fact that you're using the word cleaning and disinfecting as the same concept.
Yes.
And a lot of people do that, and I totally get it. And it's not a bad thing. However, they're two very different things.
Oh, school us. Yeah.
Cleaning is about getting rid of dirt and other things that are visible so that it looks really nice. So if you have dirt or ring around the tub or something along those lines, then when you clean that, you're essentially removing that. Disinfecting is all about killing those microbes that happen to be there. And so we have a number of different types of agents, or what we call active ingredients, that are known for being able to kill microbes. And this can include alcohol, this can include bleach, hydrogen peroxide, something called quaternium ammonium compounds. And then there are more eco-friendly versions that people like to use, like vinegar and citric acid. And in some cases, people are like using essential oils, like things that are based on thyme oil, right? Now, all of these do have the ability to clean, and that's fantastic. But the ones that can disinfect also require a certain amount of time in order for them to kill. We call it a contact time, or some people will call it a dwell time. It will say on the label, if it is a disinfectant, how long you should be keeping the contact for. Now, with some of the really efficient, really fast-acting disinfectants, it'll be 30 seconds to a minute. Okay?
Okay.
But others, it'll take 10 minutes, which means you have to leave it wet for 10 minutes. And a lot of people who use those eco-friendly cleaners are now going to their labels and looking at it, and it's going to say leave on for 10 minutes, which of course very few, if anyone, actually does.
Right.
There's also a little bit of a rule for those eco-friendly products. The active ingredient, citric acid, acetic acid, which is vinegar, lemon juice, thyme oil, that type of thing. It needs to be at a level of 5%, and it needs to stay on for 10%. So the 5-10 rule. So just try and remember that. But if you are using a disinfectant, it'll say right on the label how long you should be using it for, how long you should rest it for. For me, I use a bleach-based disinfectant that's 3 minutes. So what I do is I have 3 bathrooms. I'll spray the first one, then I'll go spray the second one, then I'll go spray the third one, and then I go back to the first one, clean that up, and then essentially go that way. That way I know that the contact time has been made in that. If you happen to be in a small New York apartment where you only have the one, I would suggest that you spray, go check your social medias, laugh at a few Instagrams or TikToks, just make sure your data isn't stolen, and then go back and clean.
Okay, I clean our bathroom. I spray and I wipe. I've never let it sit for 30 seconds.
I've let it sit for a long time, and I use bleach products too. But it's just, again, like what you were raised to do. I've never read what I'm supposed to do.
No.
And now I'm like, am I leaving it for too long? But I leave stuff in the tub for a very long time.
Oh, the tub I will.
Yeah.
When I do the shower spray, I let sit. But like if I'm just doing like
just the
counter,
toilet? Yeah, okay.
The counter, I don't let it sit.
I let it sit for a while because I want to see things get whiter. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I might be like damaging parts of my bathroom.
No, that's also something that doesn't really happen is that these items have actually been tested, and they will say on the label if there's anything that you shouldn't be spraying it on, right? You know, there are some pretty harsh disinfectants out there that essentially say, do not put on wood. Yeah. And if they put it on wood, it will damage the wood and people get all upset. But it was on the label, don't put it on wood. Mm-hmm. But when you talk about letting it stay for too long, I want to be absolutely sure I address that, because people may then say, oh, well, if I leave it on too long, it'll get resistant. Right?
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. These things are designed to be able to kill as many as possible. And usually it'll kill everything that's there. But even if there are some that don't get killed, you're not going to see them developing resistance. That's something that happens over generations and generations and generations of the microbes themselves. And really, that only applies to a few types of disinfectants which stay in the environment once they're put down the drain, as well as antibiotics, which is, of course, the medications that we take. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that you want to be concerned about when it comes to resistance. No resistance to bleach, no resistance to alcohol, no resistance to any of those essential oils or vinegars or anything like that. So you don't have to worry about resistance in that sense. And I also have to say one more thing, because this is something that has been coming up for well over a decade. Back in, I think it was 2013 or maybe it was 2010, Justin Bieber basically said something along the lines of, yes, I know Justin Bieber. I'm talking to millennials out there. If Swift said it now, everyone would still be listening to me, that, you know, it kills 99.9% of germs. What about that 0.1%? Is it resistant? No.
Okay.
It is a statistical evaluation. We put a whole ton of microbes onto a Petri plate. We add it, and then we count how many have died. And then we create that percentage out of that. So 99.9% is actually pretty much effective for everything that you're ever going to run into. And there's no resistance.
Wow.
That is good to know. I also just want to say really quickly, read the labels on your products, like you said. Ventilate your bathrooms.
Oh, yeah.
And don't mix products, because I know that when you mix products, you can create really dangerous byproducts from that as well. So make sure you're not just spraying everything you've got trying to get rid of these microbes. Really read the packages.
Yeah. No, that's smart, Noah, because I actually have never read the label of any cleaning product. I just assume I know what I'm doing.
Right.
And I wear a mask now.
Yeah.
But, and that's important because we don't realize what we're inhaling is not the best for us.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And one of the best examples of that is when you take chemistry 101 in the lab, they tell you never use a base and an acid in the same container because it's a violent reaction and it creates a lot of off-gassing and it's not fun.
Okay.
However, what they don't tell you to do is put glass cleaner, which is usually ammonia,
right,
and bleach, which is bleach, in the same sink.
Right.
Because that's exactly the same thing as what we did in Chem 101. And that's why you get that horrible off-gassing. But not only is it now bleach that's off-gassing or chlorine gas, but it's also ammonia, both of which are not particularly good for your senses.
Yeah. So that can be really dangerous.
So scary. Yeah. I never even thought about that.
Yep.
So if you're going to use multiple different disinfectants, take the time to use one, make sure that it's gone, then use another. Or as I would essentially say in terms of practice, clean your sink before you clean your mirror.
Mm-hmm.
That's so interesting.
We are learning so much.
Yes. I have to actually, if I may, backtrack a little back to the poo particles vibes.
Let's go back to the poo particles.
A recent phenomenon, I would say in the past decade or so, is people taking their phones into the bathroom.
I don't know anyone who doesn't. I don't.
I mean, look, I used to laugh at people that do that, but now I take mine, especially when I'm showering, because it has my little timer on it and I need to not be in the shower. My dermatologist yells at me for taking very long showers. So, you know, my phone's in there. Like, what is the danger of having your phone in the bathroom? What is really good? And I barely clean the screen of my phone, too.
Never.
Please tell me about this.
Tell us how wrong we're doing it.
Okay, so... by the way, I will preface this by essentially saying whatever your favorite mail order platform happens to be, you're probably going to need that because there are these beautiful Bluetooth speakers that you can then buy that are waterproof that you can put right onto your shower. And then that way you can keep your phone out of the bathroom and just Bluetooth it in so you're not going to have to worry about
that.
And the reason I say that is because the biggest issue when it comes to phones is the fact that it is a sticky surface that is non-porous and loves to attach themselves to the outside of those microbes, those bacteria, those viruses, those fungi. I have been testing phones since I started doing this like 17 years ago, and every single time, except for one woman who, I swear to goodness, she must have been like the cleanest person I ever met. But anyway, they have been covered in microbes, okay? Now, you're going to see a lot of microbes that have names like Staphylococcus epidermidis. Uh-oh. Well, epidermidis means skin, so of course you're going to see bacteria that's coming from the skin. That's normal. Cyanobacterium, which comes from the skin. That's normal. We also see names such as Enterococcus faecalis. What does faecalis sound like? Feces.
Oh, I got scared when you said the staff one, but yeah, definitely this sounds more insidious.
Feces are not good.
And that's the thing, right? Everyone gets scared about the staff because all these things, these sort of native advertising we see about microbes on phones and water bottles and everything always talk about gram positive staff.
Yeah.
But the majority of them are Staphylococcus epidermidis, which is of course a natural bacterium that is on you. Well, for me, it's of course a natural bacterium that's on your skin. Okay. What they're talking about is a transient bacterium known as Staphylococcus aureus. And this is the one that causes impetigo, cellulitis, acne, that type of thing. Okay. That's something we want to try and avoid. What's rather fascinating is that unless someone has Staphylococcus aureus sort of transiently on their skin, we're not going to see it on a phone.
Okay.
But we are going to see Enterococcus faecalis on a phone, which means that it came from fecal matter, which probably means that the person didn't wash their hands very well. Or they may have taken it into a phone and left the lid open or at 2 feet when they get close the lid and then flushed.
Oh, Lord.
So you're saying don't bring your phone into the bathroom. How should we be cleaning our phones, whether or not we brought it into the bathroom or not, and how often?
Yeah, so that is actually a really good question, because isopropyl alcohol or any kind of alcohol that you can get is the best approach. And so you spray that onto a paper towel and then you can wipe. Okay, that's the way we used to do it. And then someone over at Gojo or one of these companies went, hey, I got an idea. Why don't we put it onto a wipe so that you can just take out the wipe and then wipe it down? Right. And so that's essentially where disinfectant wipes came from in terms of that mentality. And so that's where you can now make sure that you're disinfecting it properly, because many of the disinfectant wipes are designed to be able to clean cell phones and cell phone covers and that type of thing. But if you want to do it yourself, you can always just take a paper towel, not a tissue, a paper towel, spray it down with the isopropyl alcohol that you find in the drugstore, that type of thing, and then wipe it. And it'll stay wet for about 15 to 20 seconds, which is really all that you need.
And that won't damage the phone.
No, it doesn't. Okay. Alcohol is not going to damage it. You don't have to have like a pile of rice nearby to be able to save it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't do that nearly enough. And to think about it, we put our phones on our faces.
Yeah.
It's just, I should be cleaning my phone.
And the other thing too is that we ride public transit and then we touch our phone and then we get home and we touch our phone. Yeah. And like your phone is coming into contact with so much.
Yeah, it's true. It's really true.
It's disgusting.
Yeah. Yeah, the phone has essentially become the new hands, if you will.
Yeah.
And so as a result of that, we've spent the last 20 years trying to get people to sanitize and clean their hands. Now we're trying to do the same thing with phones.
We didn't talk about washing our hands at all while we're in the bathroom. And that is such an important part. Every time, right? Whether you are doing number one or number two, give us just sort of what your general thoughts are about washing hands after we've used the bathroom.
Yeah. Oh, it's the most important thing to do. And for those of you who are wondering, sometimes it's also good to wash your hands before you touch certain parts of your anatomy.
I do that. I thought I was so weird. I do that because I'm really weird about touching my fun parts, you know, with a dirty hand.
I was literally at a gala in the washroom and someone came up to me and just like, hey, germ guy. Yeah. Should I wash my hands before I go to the urinal? And I'm like, yeah, you can do that. Have fun.
And tell us more about that. Why would we want to do that?
Because at the end of the day, we have five orifices that we want to protect, right? We have our eyes, we have our nose, we have our mouth, we have our ears, and we have the other two in the nether regions.
Right.
Okay. If you're bringing your hands to any of those, then you want them to be as clean as possible.
Yeah.
Now, one of them, we tend to use a barrier, whether it be, you know, toilet paper or some other kind of wipe. You know, I'm talking to you, dude wipes. and that works, right? But when we go to the urinal, we're not usually protecting that orifice from our hands.
Yeah.
And as a result of that, you may inadvertently touch it. And that could possibly lead to contamination. But the thing is that when you wash your hands before, then you can be absolutely sure and safe. I sanitize mine before. I just use my hand sanitizer. But I mean, you can also wash your hands. Afterwards, though, okay, that's when you have contaminated your hands with certain parts of your anatomy that probably other people will not be wanting to touch. Mm. And as a result of that, you really should be going to the sink, making sure that your hands are wet, soap, use it for 20 seconds minimum. Usually I like 40. This is where the whole singing happy birthday twice comes into play.
Right.
Or saying the alphabet backwards. And then when you're done that, you rinse it and then you want to wipe it off or dry it off with air dryer and try not to touch anything on the way out. Now, sometimes that's very difficult. So you want to make sure that you either have a paper towel, a piece that you're keeping with you to open a door, or if you are going to end up opening a door, then you use the hand sanitizer afterwards. And I mean, I just keep hand sanitizer with me everywhere I go. Yeah. I really recommend that everybody do that.
I feel like we just barely scratched the surface.
We did. But we barely disinfected.
We barely disinfected the surface. But we did, and we learned so much.
Incredible.
Jason, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, it's not a problem.
Terrified and enlightened at the same time.
It's time for Better in 5. These are your top 5 takeaways from this episode.
Number one, there are countless microbes and germs all over you and all over the world, but most of them are not bad. However, the bad ones are mean little suckers that can make you sick.
Number two, I have just two words for you. Poo particles. And you don't want them anywhere near you. So close the toilet seat before you flush.
Number three, your bath mat and your shower curtain may look innocuous, but they are filled with germs. So you should be cleaning them probably more often than you do.
Number four, cleaning and disinfecting are two totally different things. In order to disinfect, you have to use the proper cleaning product and make sure you read the label to find out how long it has to sit to be effective.
Number five, please leave your cell phone out of the bathroom. If you absolutely need it in there, make sure you disinfect it right after. Okay, Noah, when it comes to bathroom germs, how wrong had you been doing it?
Completely wrong. Mm-hmm. Absolutely wrong. I think the thing that was the most illuminating for me was I'm going to start washing my hands before I go to the bathroom.
Love that.
I had never really thought about that, but that makes total sense. I don't know that I'm going to be able to keep my phone out of the bathroom.
It's like attached to our arms
I
now.
Say that sheepishly because after, especially after what he said and about the poo particles on the phone and all of that. But yeah, it's just such a part of our lives now.
It is. You know, I think I'm just going to start cleaning my phone more often.
There you go.
It's compromise, right? Harm reduction.
You know, though, when you think about it, Dr. Butthole from our poo episode, he also said we shouldn't have our phones in there because we shouldn't be spending time on the toilet. It's not good for our butts. So now we have two experts both saying, don't bring your phone into the bathroom. And we're just like, too bad we're doing it.
I know. You know, but if we were the type of people who listened to geniuses, we would be like a different two people.
We wouldn't have this show.
No.
Anyway, until next time, as long as there are things to get wrong, we're going to be right here to help you do them better.
That's right.
Do you have something you think you're doing wrong? Email us at amidoingitwrong@huffpost.com and let us know.